because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm Sean Johnson.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at this week in the Capitol and politics. I want to thank Sean Johnson, Capitol Bureau Chief for Wisconsin Public Radio, for filling in for the vacationing JR. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you, Steve.
It never stops in the Capitol, does it?
It doesn't. It has slowed down a little bit sometimes.
And you went to the two conventions, but that's not over. Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Right.
Okay, let's talk about what I think is the lead item this week. Our Attorney General says, I'm not going to appeal the U.S. Court of Appeals ruling. So are we finally getting some ground rules on what will and what will be in place for the November 8 election?
I think it's a lot clearer now. I mean, you look back at this week, arguably the biggest news was what did not happen.
Yep.
And what did not happen was the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals did not step in, as it has in other voter ID-related cases,
yes,
and side with the State Department of Justice to overturn a lower court. They issued a brief one-page decision essentially saying, no, we're not going to do that, leaving the Western District Judge James Peterson's ruling intact. And then the other thing that did not happen this week is DOJ, under Attorney General Brad Schimel, perhaps reading the tea leaves, did not appeal to the United States Supreme Court. So that officially ends that legal battle for a variety of election-related laws that have been overturned now because of the federal court's decision.
Sean, Schimel had shown a great propensity to go to war and climb all the legal rungs here. Were you surprised that he's not appealing the Court of Appeals?
I guess you have to look at where he lost. He had a pretty favorable panel in the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. I mean, just as background, when these cases go up to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago, you get three judges. The three judges that were on this case were the same three judges, Frank Easterbrook, Diane Sykes, another judge, name escapes me right now.
But Sykes, a former Wisconsin Supreme
former
Court
Wisconsin
Justice.
Supreme Court Justice, Frank Easterbrook. Sykes and Easterbrook have upheld Wisconsin's voter ID law in a 2014 challenge. Mm. The same three-judge panel recently sided with the state in another voter ID-related challenge out of the Eastern District, Judge Adelman.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is a conservative panel. They were all appointed by Republican presidents. And for them to unanimously just say, no, we're not going to go there, what are Brad Schimel's options at that point? Is he going to go to the full Seventh Circuit? No, it's not going to work. The United States Supreme Court right now split 4-4. Chances aren't so great right there. And then the closer you get to Election Day, the more hesitant the Supreme Court's going to be to step in and take any kind of action like that. So he didn't have a lot of options in this particular case.
He's kind of boxed in, huh?
Yeah.
Well, let's look at, as a result of Attorney General's not going to appeal, let's look at what we now know. First of all, the residency standard will be 10 and not 28 days. That was at issue. Early voting will be allowed in more than one location in one municipality. And if I knew it, I'd give the early voting dates in our two largest cities, Milwaukee and Madison. Pretty soon, right?
Madison, September 26th.
Hey, way to go.
Earliest it's ever been.
Did you say September 26th?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
For the November 8 election.
Right.
And
I mean, when you think about it, these laws that restricted early voting, one of them was passed as part of that voter ID law back in 2011.
Yep.
And that was not thrown out in court. So, those restrictions were put in place. And then in the interim, we switched from having a September primary to an August primary. So now the clerks have the finalized tallies from the August primaries earlier than they've ever had. And if you're a city like Madison, which is very big on in-person absentee voting, there's no reason they have to wait. There's no restriction under the law.
Madison and Milwaukee can set then basically their own hours for early voting. They can be open on weekends. Remember, you and I heard that debated on the floor of the Assembly?
Right.
So they can. These two cities, can all cities set their own hours now?
They can. It's just a matter of whether they want to,
staffing,
whether they have the resources. Right.
Yeah,
I mean, there's no restrictions on anybody in Wisconsin. The argument when this came through the legislature was that it was a matter of fairness, that people in other communities didn't like what they saw on the news, essentially, when they'd see people lining up in Madison and Milwaukee to vote.
Yeah.
Judge Peterson said that's basically a non-argument and threw it out. So any community now has that option. Practically speaking, we know Madison and Milwaukee are going to take it.
Right. Okay. We also know there will be the old standard, the standard passed by the Republicans, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m., on when clerks can accept absentee ballots. That's gone. They
right.
can accept it. And then finally, university or technical college IDs are accepted even if they've expired, if they meet all the other criteria. So the rules are beginning to take shape for the November 8 election.
Yeah, and it's kind of noteworthy to hear the governor respond to the state of things now, whether he was, you know, his position now that these had been overturned was kind of nonchalant. I mean, basically said no big deal.
Well, he also said the centerpiece of the change that we've
right.
been fighting for 5 years, the photo ID requirement, remains in effect.
And it does.
And it does. Well, after November 8, could Schimmel still appeal to the full Court of Appeals and maybe the U.S. Supremes? Or when he says we're not going to appeal, is that a temporary decision? What do you think?
I think in terms of legal maneuvers that can take place to potentially overturn this lower court decision before the November election, I think those tools have run out, practically speaking. This case is still ongoing. You're still going to see eventually a decision from the Seventh Circuit on why they did that. I mean, they probably won't just leave it at a one-page no.
That's true.
And so, you know, the case goes on. There are bits and pieces of this that have been stayed by the district court judge himself. You've got this other voter ID-related case, Judge Edelman's courtroom, that was
sure.
sent back. So, I mean, the legal maneuvers on election laws in Wisconsin continue. But for right now, I think you can say we're, like, pretty... Watch the news, right?
Right, right.
But...
It's
getting to look like this is going to be the the layout for the 2016 election.
Yeah, we're finally getting rules for the November 8 election. Okay, right now, maybe even as we speak, Governor Walker, County Executive Abley in Milwaukee Mayor Barrett are announcing a $4.5 million in aid to Milwaukee, resulting, let's be candid, from the unrest, the protests, the violence, I believe the weekend of August 13th. Let's quickly go through some of those elements. $1.5 million for unemployment programs, $1 million to Milwaukee's businesses for training programs. There will be new mobile teams set up in churches and community centers. These are workforce development, the State Department of Workforce Development teams, mobile teams aimed at jobs. Potential WEDIC. Can WEDIC help Sherman Park area businesses damaged or destroyed? There were six businesses burned, completely destroyed or damaged. And $2 million to demolish or rehab for closed, blighted properties. Now, John, we don't know all the details, and obviously we're not at the press conference, but pretty apparent this is a response to the protests and the violence. Is it much?
Yeah, $4.5 million, and we have a big budget, right? And my understanding is that this does not involve new money,
right.
that it's being reshuffled around. It was
yep.
going to go elsewhere in the budget. And it's being focused on Milwaukee instead. It's not a huge number. I think it's noteworthy, though, that you see announcing this morning, Governor Walker standing side by side with not only Chris Abley, but Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett, who, of course, ran against Walker twice.
Yes.
And who has really been pummeled by some Republican legislators who have blamed him for the crime problems in Milwaukee and really him exclusively.
Yes.
So for Walker to get up this morning, I just heard bits and pieces of what they talked about, but Walker introduced Barrett, called him our partner. Barrett says to Walker, we really appreciate the work you've done. Walker says this is a city, county, and state issue. They're putting this out there. They're making their presence known and the fact that they're working together known. That's significant. Is $4.5 million going to fix all of Milwaukee's woes?
No.
So of course not.
No, but it's a pretty symbolic gesture, and it comes fairly quickly after the unrest. And I want to commend public radio. What you had one report today from somebody who went back to the Sherman Park area and quoted a resident, and who said, and the resident said this, these are his words, not mine, that wasn't a riot. The next one will be a riot. So you have a great deal of unemployment, well, Donald Trump laundry listed, 40% of African-American men between the ages of 25 and 54 unemployed. The MPS graduation rate is 60%. So you're right. The takeaway here is $4.5 million. Not going to cure the inner city ills, but it's a symbolic down payment. Right,
right exactly.
Right.
It's kind of chilling when you hear that the next one, right, would be a riot.
I heard it on Wisconsin Public
yeah.
Radio, so it's got to be true. And just a programming note, on Wednesday, Wisconsin and I went to the inner city of Milwaukee and interviewed six legislators who either represent Sherman Park or contiguous districts to Sherman Park. That's at wisi.org. We interviewed Senator Lena Taylor, Senator-elect LaTanya Johnson, Representatives Evan Goyke, Leon Young, and David Bowen, and Representative-elect Jason Fields on just these very issues. Excuse me for the promo there.
That's Sean. Quite all right.
Okay, now let's turn to ACT scores. What I find intriguing is before this year, about 73% of Wisconsin high school students had taken the ACTs. Well, now you have 100% taking it. And remember, for decades, we saw the press releases, Wisconsin students either first or second in ACT. Well, is anybody waving a banner, we're number four?
I don't know. It kind of bursts our bubble a little bit. Now that we know where everyone stands, we're not so great. Although, among states where all students take it, fourth isn't so bad.
Right.
But I mean, this is the first kind of big picture look we've had, though, at where we really are. Yeah. And if you just set the politics aside, which is impossible, but if you just look at this, for the numbers themselves, there's a lot of kids that are going to graduate Wisconsin high schools and not be where they should be for reading, math, science especially.
Yeah, they call these benchmark areas, and you're supposed to be at some level of expertise in three of the benchmarks, and I think only about a third of our students were. Maybe that's a national figure. I have it wrong. But Tony Evers, who sat in that chair a few days ago, called it a solid starting point. But when you go deeper, when you look at some of the racial disparities here, Sean, there's still, remember the term achievement gap? It is still very alive and well. I mean, when I look at these numbers, Wisconsin African American high school students scored only 77% of the score of all students, and African American high school students in Wisconsin scored only 73% of the scores of white students. And when you look at Hispanics, Wisconsin Hispanic high school students scored 87% of all students in Wisconsin, but only 83% of white students. So it's still a dramatic indication of how far we have to come in the issue of the achievement gap. Agree?
Yeah, and I mean, when you talk about African Americans in particular, where do African Americans live for the most part in Wisconsin? They live in the city of Milwaukee. Where the governor and Mayor Barrett were talking today about, a partnership to make things better. So, but it's obviously just another indicator that it's a big problem.
And you remember Mr. Trump's speech in West Bend? He said MPS spends an average of $10,000 per student, and he said that's an awful lot of money. So it plays out in all these different ways. It really is intriguing. What will the next budget do for MPS? What additional aid for the city? We just don't know, until Governor Walker submits it.
All right.
Okay, next subject. So the Government Accountability Board is no more. We have an elections board, which tasked with running the elections, and we have an ethics commission. I said board. There are two commissions.
Right.
So this week, the six ethics commissioners, three D's, three R's, are asked, should we be able to make political donations? Their answer, by a 4-2 vote, is yes. Now, pardon my naivety, Sean, but aren't they the cops on the ethics beat? Why do they think they should be able to make donations, do you think?
It's a new day. That's not requirement that you couldn't donate was part of the law for the Government Accountability Board, and now that this new ethics commission, which is made up, I think you see mostly of partisans. I mean, there's some judges on there, but they're even chosen from a pool selected by Democrats and Republicans.
Right.
They don't have to abide by that, and given the opportunity to voluntarily abide by that, only two of them wanted to.
So are you and I naive to think that if they're the cops on the beat, they should stand back and say maybe we shouldn't give? I guess my question is, if they write a check, $1,000,
what's
going to
happen when that person goes to the
if there's
the
an ethical investigation or an ethics case pending involving that candidate that they've written checks to? Wouldn't they have to follow me here, stand off that case?
That was...
Recuse?
So I don't think they have to. I mean, this was the big... This was one of the big discussion points.
Yes.
When this law was pushed through to eliminate the GAB.
Yes.
So what are you going to... You know, what are these boards actually going to do? And when you have a split of partisan appointees. And I think, by and large, the feeling is probably not too much in that you'll have this divide. So, you know, I think we've now seen a bipartisan willingness to, continue to be able to donate and to be an active participant in the political arena, which you were tasked with regulating.
Yes.
So, I wouldn't be surprised if they'd be comfortable making decisions about people they've donated to.
Excuse me for interrupting, but the commissioner said, everybody knows we're partisans.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows we have D's or R's on our backs. So given that that's upfront and part of our public identities, why shouldn't we be able to legally donate? But that was very intriguing because you had Democrats, former Attorney General Pig Lautenschlager, Mr. Hal Brooks, and former state senator, but... he retired as a Waukesha County judge, Republican Mac Davis, and Katie McCallum, a Republican voting yes, voting no, former Assembly Majority Leader Pat Strokota, a Republican, and former Judge Kinney, voting a Democratic appointee, voting no. So this is one of the first initial decisions made by a brand new commission, and it just intrigues me.
One of the first ones we've been paying attention to, and at the day that they met to talk about this, it was kind of high up in the agenda, and they floated it off to the end of the day. It's kind of interesting that the people who spoke about it or spoke in favor of keeping political donations an option were a couple of Democratic appointees. I mean,
yes.
Hal Brooks and Lautenschlager,
right.
Both spoke in favor of it. I believe it was Lautenschlager said that if she thought there was going to be some kind of a ban on that, she wouldn't have wanted to be part of the commission. So this is a very...
Part of her free
speech
rights.
This is a pretty marked contrast between the GAB, where, this just wasn't allowed. We're now seeing it's not only allowed here, but by some of the commissioners embraced.
Okay, I have a question. I don't know the answer. Maybe you don't.
Oh.
So here we have a decision made by the ethics commissioners.
Mm-hmm.
Has the elections commissioners dealt with this? Can they, to best of your knowledge, can they make contributions?
You just asked a question that I can't give you a firm
I told you I don't know the
to.
Answer
yeah.
either.
I mean, I don't think there's a prohibition. I'm sure I'll check after the show.
Yeah, so will I. Remember, the Elections Commission is also 3 D's, 3 R's.
Right, and that one's even more clearly partisan, right? You don't have these judges that are picked from a pool
right.
that were selected by Democrats and Republicans. You just have a pretty pure partisan board on the elections side.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, next subject. The new conservative legal... Boy, what to call it? The conservative legal voice of Wisconsin, the emerging conservative legal voice, the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, filed suit on behalf of Michigan-based retailer Crist Oil against the minimum markup law. That law says retailers cannot sell products below cost. When asked, Attorney General Brad Schimmel issued a statement saying DOJ will defend the law. Were you telling me like this is a number of lawsuits against this law?
According to, I haven't gone back to read all these, but the Wisconsin Petroleum Marketers and Convenience Store Association, which has been a steadfast opponent to efforts to upend this law over the years, over many years, they said that this will be the 12th court challenge against the law and that it survived the previous 11. So, and they had a list going back to the 1940s. I believe, of cases where it's been challenged either in state or federal court. So challenges to the minimum markup law are not something new. How many efforts to overturn minimum markup have you covered, would you say?
Yeah. Several.
And it doesn't matter what the makeup of the legislature is either
right.
over the years. I mean, it's been a constant issue.
But you've heard the rhetoric. The mom-and-pop grocery stores will be hurt if you repeal this law because it does provide some leveling of the playing field but Crist operates, I don't know, 18 like convenience stores in northern Wisconsin. Well, they file a lawsuit because they can't get it repealed in the legislature.
Yeah.
Why can't they get it repealed? Because you have talk radio in Milwaukee continuing to call for it. Who blocked it? Do you remember?
These convenience store operators have been a fairly effective lobby over the years. I mean, if a bill comes up, I mean, I have recollection that there were several sessions where these mom and pop store operators will come and show
and
up
testify.
And testify and
yep.
say, look, I want to remain in my community, but if Walmart down the street, which sells gas, can afford to drop their price below cost, yeah. they're going to push me out of business. That argument has won the day. I mean, the argument to repeal it on behalf of Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty and other conservatives is a little cleaner. They essentially say we want to be able to offer the lowest price possible, period. And so let's get rid of this law. It's, grocers, mom and pop, gas store operators who say, you know, practically speaking, this is going to drive us out of business.
Yeah, that's very interesting. So the lawsuit's filed. Hey, before we adjourn, can I you worked your butt off at both conventions. Give me one memory of each convention. Republican wow. first, just one.
Republican, you only get to be on the floor for 20 to 30 minutes at a time. You have
yeah.
to get these special passes.
And if you exceed the time, they
yeah.
won't issue you
so
another
I was
one.
Trying to time it to get out there for Governor Walker. I timed it poorly. Suddenly, I can't get to the place where I need to get the floor pass anymore.
Okay.
I don't know why. So I go down the other end of the hallway. I can't get past there either. I'm just trapped in this media horde. And it's because Trump was going to walk by any minute, you know.
I see.
So I missed the governor's speech from the floor. I could hear it from the hallway. But,
wow.
Stuff like that popped up. And then the Democratic side, for whatever reason, they let me stay out there for the whole thing. So I got to see the balloon drop and the confetti and the whole shebang. So it's quite a spectacle.
Wisconsin Republicans loom large at that Cleveland convention.
They
correct?
Did, yeah. They
With
think they
Ryan
like
and Walker and
seven
Priebus.
Speakers. Sheriff David Clark was
yes.
very well received in that convention
Ramrod
hall.
Straight looking up, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He's, he
bellowed out Blue Lives Matter.
Yep.
That was what that crowd ate it
said
up.
Said he saw anarchy in the Occupy movement
yeah.
and Black Lives Matter. You mentioned Priebus.
Yeah.
What do you hear about, does he want to keep that job?
It sounds like, so this is sort of based on, you know, third hand watching the chat.
You and I are reading the same stories.
Right,
yep.
We're reading the same national stories. I mean, it didn't sound like it. It doesn't look like it's a very fun job this year.
Why would he
in particular.
Why would he want another term?
I don't know how you balance what's going on in that, in the national party right now. Regardless of what happens with Donald Trump, there's going to be a group of voters going forward who are going to kind of remember where they stood in this election, and just seems to have changed the party in pretty yeah. demonstrable ways.
Because we weren't at the Republican convention. How accessible was Speaker Ryan, Governor Walker, Mr. Priebus?
Not terribly accessible.
Not terribly
no.
accessible.
Not terribly. I mean... I guess that's my answer. Governor Walker did take some questions from reporters. Priebus from Wisconsin reporters did not.
Did not.
Paul Ryan from Wisconsin reporters,
no.
not so available.
And then you remember the Democratic convention
yeah.
is more accessible.
Yeah, a lot more accessible, which could you could see potentially some downsides for that. I mean, Ron Kind was speaking at the Democratic convention, the Wisconsin delegation's breakfast, and mm-hmm. was actually booed by some Bernie delegates, but some protesters over
Is that
trade.
Over TPP?
TPP, yeah, yeah. And he got up there and forcefully spoke in favor of it, but it was quite a scene.
Right.
But yeah, largely, I would say the Wisconsin delegation at the Democratic convention was a lot more open to the press. And it's not just to me. I think you would talk to other reporters who had the same experience there, where it was just a little more regimented at the Republican convention.
Well,
a lot more security downtown at the Republican convention.
Oh, I bet.
As well.
How
it
many
was
security
like a
checkpoints?
Fortress-like
How
atmosphere.
Many security checkpoints did
well,
you
once you got through, once you got through the big security checkpoint,
you were
in. But
how
getting through that took some time.
Now, having gone to a few national conventions, how far away was your hotel from the Cleveland site?
Cleveland, I was like 5 miles away from downtown.
5 miles away.
Yeah, lucked out.
That's a long
it was
time.
Philadelphia is like a
Well, I want to pick your brain because I didn't go and JR didn't go to either convention, so I appreciate
that. It's fun and it's busyness.
You know? It's very hard work, long, long hours. I'm Steve Walters.
I'm Sean Johnson.
That's Rewind for August 26th.